Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a Vinnie Eastwood Show special. It's the Dark Occulted Mysticism Show. And today, we have our Dark Occulted Mystic panel of Freighter X, a member of, like, nine secret societies and rover of musty tomes that haven't been looked on by a motherfracker for, like, 200 years. And we have James Wright, former potential concubine to the 33rd degree of Freemasonry and knows all of the filthy rituals. I say potential concubine because there was no concubinary. And... and then on the other thing, speaking of the light, we have Mater X,
who's the co-host with Freighter X on the
yes, the
Middle Chamber on Saturday nights on SyncBook Radio Network.
Now,
not quite a concubine.
No. But she's cute.
Better.
She's cute nonetheless.
Real deal, man.
Yeah.
Real deal.
Yeah.
I gave him plenty of sons, so I qualify for full-fledged status there.
Yeah. Just make sure the wax on his wings don't melt when he flies too close to his sons. There is a disinformation panelist in Freemasonry. And by panelist, I mean the royal panelist, as in there's a huge disinformation campaign going on about how to make it not look all that bad and how to maintain reputation. And one of the points I'd like to raise is that, is Freemasonry damned if it does and damned if it doesn't come clean about any form of scumbaggery that has infiltrated its organization?
Not at all. They could set an example. I mean, after all, what happened to me and to countless others, if the correct perpetrators would have been disciplined in the correct Masonic ways, then they would have set an example from the leadership, I mean, and the remainder of the curmudgeons in the order would have looked at that and gone, I guess I better not be a douche lord today. So I think it would have had a very positive outcome, actually.
Do you agree, Freighter? Because there's the other element where maybe they're afraid of a reliving of the dark old days where there was a persecution of Freemasonry because of a few bad apples.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, here's the thing. There already is a certain amount of bias and prejudice out there. I mean, you and I, Jay, both have experienced it as Freemasons coming forward and just talking openly about being Freemasons in and of itself is a judgment from others. But I went down the track of, in the beginning, I think, more than lately of really trying to extol the virtues of the order and the system and all that. But, you know, I've gotten to the point in my experience with it that I really have lost a lot of hope in the system for a multitude of reasons, which we've already discussed, chief among them being the inequality of the sexes within, you know, I mean, the fact that they don't recognize women, the fact that there are still Grand Lodges out there that don't recognize black, you know, Prince Hall Masons and, you know, other nationalities, across the seas. I mean, there's so much closed-mindedness and rigid control still in place within the system of Freemasonry, not to mention the nepotism, corruption, and, you know, just general scumbaggery, as you call it, Vinny, that is going on the local level and on the nationwide level and on the global level. So there's too much of that to ignore anymore. You know, there's too much we're in the time now where the doors should be thrown open and the information should be made available to those who choose to know, and especially with regards to government policies and these leaders who are involved with these secret orders and use it as a backdrop for keeping the public uninformed.
Well, what is it that they fear? What is it that they're keeping secret? And if you're talking about running open the doors, I mean, what would happen if there was a full-scale investigation or something of that nature?
Well, that would have to involve a lot of law enforcement personnel who are Masons. So it's going to all come down to where do their loyalties lie. And as I've publicized and harped on many times, the oath of the 32nd degree is starkly different than the oath of the Master Mason's degree, where you're no longer swearing allegiance to your government or whatever, you're swearing allegiance to the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite and what they call its form of government and nothing else. So if the Scottish Rite was under fire and any lawyer or judge or anybody involved in the prosecution thereof, then they're going to be told, don't you dare. And out of pure fear, they won't.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to get more specific about what you're saying for anybody who's listening. The fact of the matter is that what Jay's talking about is when you are initiated and join the Blue Lodge system, you take oaths and swear allegiance and obligations with the disclaimer is always clearly there that you'd never be asked to do anything that would go against your country or your family obligations or your own honor and dignity. I mean, and yet, you know, but you do take an oath to keep the secrets of Masons and Masonry, murder and treason notwithstanding. This is part of the oath and obligation. When you join the Scottish Rite, on the other hand, and as a matter of fact, when you receive an invitation to join the Scottish Rite as just a general Blue Lodge Mason in the mail, you're already being asked to swear an oath of fealty to the Supreme Council in the application form. And there is no qualification of murder and treason withstanding. There is no qualification of you won't be asked to do anything against your country or your family or anything like that. As a matter of fact, I've got it on eyewitness testimony from high-ranking Freemasons that when they joined the red cap, the middle level between the black capped 32nd degree, there's the red cap, what is it called, Jay, the Knight Court of Honor?
Knight Commander Court of Honor, yeah.
Yeah, the Knight Commander Court of Honor, where you get a red cap before you get a white cap. There's a little in-between kind of little club there. And I've had...
And if you backstab them, you get capped.
You get capped, yeah, right. But no, I have on eyewitness testimony, they were told in no uncertain terms when they were initiated into the order that if they didn't, you know, they were to do what they were told, and if they didn't like it, they could just get out right now. You know, I mean, it's all about totalitarian hierarchical control, very, very rigid, almost Vatican papal like structure within the Scottish Rite, for example. But now here's the thing, though. We can't keep it completely isolated on Freemasonry because we're dealing with global power elite here. We're dealing with dark cult of mystics across the board. It's not just Freemasons. It's these guys that belong to all these orders and then some that are the ones that will never see a courtroom. They'll never see the inside of a courtroom. They'll never hear charges read against them. They'll never even acknowledge a culpability deniability in anything, plausible deniability across the board for these guys, because they're part of the elite that never get touched. They've always been, you know, Teflon coated, nothing sticks to them. And that's just the way it is. And that's the structure in America. You just look through the newspaper ads or newspaper headlines and a lot of the back pages, and Mater X chime in, if you will, of all the cases of the wealthy and the powerful. And Jay, you brought it up yourself several times on your show, Dial M for Mason, that these guys, they get away with worse than murder and get slapped on the wrist and get, you know, nothing happens to them because of their connections between their families and these, you know, different levels of cabals and inner, you know, concentric circles of memberships that go across generations and across, they cross all borders and nationalities. This is a special little club. I mean, right or wrong, guys.
Oh, right.
Oh, totally. Sure. And that's why the guys at the top, I mean, how do you prosecute them? It's you know, you'd have to have a complete breakdown of the political structure of that region. I mean, if they would have disciplined the guys that did what they did to me in Texas, then the entire Texas state legislature would crumble in Austin, because those are the type of people who are involved.
And the guy that all of us have talked to now, Dr. Colin Ross, I mean, he, you know, here's a doctor who reviewed 15,000 declassified CIA MK Ultra documents depicting one gruesome, torturous case of mind control and testing on individuals after another. I mean, it nonchalantly describing feeding uranium to kids and putting electrode implants in people. And yet, you know, I mean, you caught the show, Jay. What about that part? He was talking about how they tried to cure the gay man by giving him, putting electrodes in him and doing psychic driving and you know, all that. Was that crazy or what?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they fund all kinds of ridiculous stuff. The most crazy would, of course, be the MK Ultra mind control stuff that's come out.
Well, yeah, and that's this is the real shocker, guys, is that this stuff isn't new. It's been on the books and declassified since the 70s. That's the one thing he told me. I don't know if you guys caught that in your talk with him, that these documents are not new. They're just declassified, made readily available now, per se, but they've been on out there since the 70s, since the Church Committee, since the original intelligence exposure committees that started after, like, the Pentagon Papers and the Watergate scandal and all the things in America that led to them having to come clean at least a little bit. But, you know, it's always really, to me, left me kind of bothered. Like, I've always felt like, you know, for example, Bush Sr. was the director of the CIA during those committee hearings. You know, and a lot of the paperwork and stuff supposedly that was destroyed or, you know, turned over. And there's a lot of sketchy stuff. You know, in the end, the final analysis was, well, yeah, we did a lot of bad things back in the 50s and 60s, but we're all better now. We're not doing it anymore. You know, we're not going to, you know, no more MK Ultra programs for us. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all over words. With, you know, oh, that's in the past, man. It's in the past.
Yeah, I got two words for you, Naked Survivor or Miley Cyrus. You know what I mean? Like, either way, it's the mind control programs are on full effect, and it's all designed to blow our minds. That's
what's Naked Survivor? Is that when they put a whole bunch of hot girls on an island with a bunch of sexual predators and see who survives the longest?
That would probably sell, Vinny. That's
otherwise known
right
as otherwise known as Jekyll Island.
Yeah, that's a seller right there, Vinny. No, Naked Survivor was something that Joe Atwell was talking about with Henrik Palmgren on Red Ice last couple weeks ago. It's one of the new generation of Survivor offshoots where they're like, they're given nothing. You know, they have, like, you know, they're wearing just thongs or whatever, and they have nothing on these islands. They have to eat raw food and bugs and Naked Survivor. You know what I mean? It's full on. I mean, it's just full on debauched, full on decadence, full on mind-melting, sugar-coated mind-melting garbage that is designed to do exactly what it does and bring us all down to a nice, healthy, low vibration and narrow bandwidth of probability and possibilities.
Of sex, deceit, and scumbaggery, and selfishness, more or less.
Well, yeah, you know, the whole point of the shows and is the fact that you're got people preying upon each other, betraying, you know, forming alliances and then betraying each other. And it's all about the final winner, you know, winner at all costs, right? Just fully, you know, that's the exact opposite to me of what the spirit of what we all should be embracing in our world right now is the exact opposite, which, you know, they if you look at one competitive reality show after another on TV, it's a series of depictions of people preying upon each other and betraying each other's confidence and trust. And it's just, I think, designed to
it's an example propose. I mean, it's kind of like the Simpsons, Family Guy, and all of these other things. How many families that appear on television currently are not dysfunctional or having to deal with some kind of a zombie apocalypse or something absolutely extraordinary? Normal families who are actually really, really happy and setting a good example for the rest of the people.
The zombie apocalypse, she said she couldn't think of one. The zombie apocalypse meme is the other one, because that's the same thing. Now we're taking the preying upon each other to a new level. We're literally consuming each other now, you know, and or having to kill and maim and destroy, you know, by cutting the heads open of the ones who are going to feed on the others. You know, it's just it's that full on kill or be killed, you know, survival of the fittest to the fullest. And that's, you know, it's so transparent. If we're considering another view, if we're looking at reality and looking at humanity from the perspective of like what Freeman calls the friendship agenda, which, you know, may sound corny to some, but the whole idea of the friendship agenda or anything like that is the idea that we launch from a new belief that humanity is inherently good, that people are inherently good, that they are inherently good natured, and they really inherently, for the most part, most people I've come into contact with, they don't want to hurt other people. They're not trying to take advantage. They're just trying to survive and trying to make it through this world. And nowadays, boy, the hard times across the board, I'll tell you, my heart goes out to all the listeners and all the supporters and all the truthers out there who I have had contact with in these past few months. It is one sad story after another across America. It is unbelievable to me the amount of hardship that I have witnessed and heard reports from with regards to people in our world today. And I'll tell you, Vinny, America is fast heading to a third world status, because it is, I'll tell you, the picture of the poverty in America is a stark and grim reality that is touching everybody's lives.
Have you seen the education statistics? Americans on average are much dumber than people in the third world. The people in the third world know how to tie their shoelaces and stuff, man. They know how to find their country on a map.
You're merely exposing my ignorance, buddy, because, I mean, I believe you. I wouldn't even know. I've never been outside of America. I feel sheltered, and I feel like we've been duped right from the get-go. That's why I was mentioning
it. It was something like 70% of Americans don't even have a freaking passport, so they can't even travel out of the country even if they wanted to.
I don't have a passport.
Yeah, I've risked my case.
It's like $150 to get a passport, Vinny. You got to go down to the post office with $150 to fill out the application.
In New Zealand, it's $500.
Yeah, I don't have an extra $150.
And we've got like 4 million people that live in this country and 1 million New Zealanders abroad. Like, we're one of the most well-traveled people in the world. I mean, could you imagine if 20% of Americans were globally roaming around and whatnot? Maybe they are. There's probably heaps of Americans out there. I see plenty traveling. And I don't know what it is, but I don't know. I'm not even going anywhere with this. I've just got some kind of wanderlust.
Oh, but you make great points as far as how we perceive the outside world, how we perceive what, you know, when I say that America's fast, you know, becoming a third world nation, and you point out America's surpassed third world nation status in many ways culturally. It's just a matter of perspective.
It's got like a 50 times higher birth mortality rate than the third world.
Exactly. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. That's the kind of point I mean. And this is, we are so sheltered, and our perception is so sculpted by the media that we are looking at the world through fishbowl. You know, we're looking at the world through a lens that's been magnified and narrowed down, you know, and we are not to perceive it. There is no greater firewalled reality than American perception, as far as I'm concerned. And I see it over and over again when you just talk to anybody walking down the street. It is the mind control program is in so full effect in the average populace of America. Each person is doing their part to reinforce the system of control within their own mind.
It's problematic, isn't it? And in so doing, they don't care about anything that's actually real. And as a result, everything of substance eventually erodes away over time and allows itself to be replaced by something else.
All that people are interested in are pop culture references like entertainment, movies, TV, and sports. That's it. I've been working on the line, working in an Italian restaurant these past couple months. You know, just as I'm finishing up the book, we're like, in order for me to finish the book, I had to take time and not work, and that is just impossible with our situation. So we've been struggling. I've had to get back to work a couple months ago just to make ends meet while I'm finishing up this book. And I'll tell you, I've taken tolls. I've polled people at work and asked them, "Do you know who Edward Snowden is? You know, do you know who Bradley Manning is? Do you know who blah, blah, blah is? Fill in the blank. I don't care who it is across the board. Any current event, anything going on?" Not one. Nobody knows anything. Nothing. It is shocking. These are kids that are in college. They're in college currently pursuing degrees and PhDs and postgraduate studies. Completely narrowed, specialized focus with absolutely no clue as to what's going on and who's out there except for pop culture, except for movie stars, TV stars, you know, musicians and sports athletes, sports stars. That's it.
I recall when I was in film and media studies in university in the second year, the incidentally American lecturer said that the reason why TV was so good is because it gave us all things in common. And my argument was that the things that we have in common because of TV aren't real, don't matter, and in so doing, our relationships become less, and so does the understanding of the world around us, because nothing we care about and nothing we see has any real value. Only the things that we believe are fantasy, only the things that are fantasy appear real to us. And I got a D for that essay, unfortunately, so I quit university and said, "This is bullshit."
I hear you, man. I hear you. You know, I've had similar experiences on my own with different professors, and it was the same then as it is now. I mean, it's grown more, the gulf of the gap and the gulf of ignorance, I would say, the collective duh, the confederacy of dunces, the just the general feeling of malaise, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
See, these people don't even know what the word malaise is. They think it's a kind of mayonnaise from Malaysia.
Or a fruit spread, you know, marmalade, right?
Yeah, pass the marmalades.
But
you just muted yourself out there, Fredo.
Oh, sorry. Nice. Seriously, one, it is seriously, you know, apparent though when you can just turn to
yeah. And Freda knows what he's talking. Freda knows what he's talking about, ladies and gentlemen, because he's got five kids. He would know what's apparent.
Four kids at home and one grown up and on his own, you know. But it is, in fact, it is. We do know what it's like to be and what is apparent. And it is a tragedy at many times being a parent to see the world that your children are inheriting, that a world filled with electronic gadgetry and distraction, which is so working to keep everyone distracted and really just not caring at all about what's going on and what direction we're being led.
See, I thought about a script, and you guys have seen V for Vendetta, right? And he walks into the BTN, you know, British Television Network, and he's got a bomb strapped to his chest, and he dresses everybody up in the same costume that he's got, and he basically just plays a pre-recorded thing onto live air and hijacks all the mainstream media just for a minute to sit down and have a little chat and tell everybody that there's something very terribly wrong with this country, isn't there? and actually foments a revolution based upon a singular hijacking, which he never got caught in and nobody died in. Oh, well, actually, he did kill a whole bunch of people, didn't he? Little police officers and stuff and thugs. But the point still remains is there's something in that, not in the terms of, oh, let's violently take over broadcasters. No. I'm talking about competing broadcasting. There must be a way to amplify the voice of truth to overpower the current mainstream media paradigm. And people have been trying. We've been trying in all manner of different ways. And I wonder whether or not it will be enough and be enough in time at all. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, the Dark Occulted Mysticism Special. Check out the sponsors on the homepage, the old blue shield, if you want to protect yourself from all these radiation, and at least some of the side effects of all this gadgetry. You know, click on the blue shield banner on the homepage there, plus the old gourmet soap kitchen and Wagga Wagga, the high tea cafe. There's a couple of books up there as well, like The Crowdfunding Revolution. So, also, remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast, does not exist without your funding, ladies and gentlemen, and believe me, times have been really, really hard. Okay, me and my wife have to buy, like, our meals one at a time. You know, that's how bad it is. We can't even do a week shopping. It's really, it kind of fills your life with anxiety, just not having enough of that kind of jazz. We're surviving, and so I haven't been complaining about it up until now. And I realized everybody's in a lot of hard places. Freight is in a hard place. James is in a hard place. I'm in a hard place. I'm sure a lot of you listeners are too. And if you wanted to donate and support any of us, we've all got websites and we'd very much appreciate your donation right away. And we'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the Dark Occulted Mysticism Special, and we have Freighter X, Mater X, and James Wright, and we're talking about, well, Dark Occulted Mysticism, obviously. Now, what I was talking about afterwards was how exactly are we going to be able to garner the right ability, or rather the right capacity of influence, to actually make a real visible change in the future for, well, basically the next generation.
Well, there's only one real answer, man, and that is to sow the seeds of psycho-spiritual anarchy. That's what I think. That's it, man. That's the only answer.
That and know thy enemy. If you will indulge me for just a moment, I have a little thing in my hands at the moment. It's a book. Not a book, but it's a three-ring binder with a manual in it that was privately done, and it's called Promoting the Masonic Message, and it's something that only I had my privileged hands on as a Supreme Council employee, because it was my job to read it and understand it for the PR of the place. And so I've been flipping through while we've been talking, looking at some things of interest, and it's not too long, so I'll make this short. But like here on one page, page 4, it says, "It is generally agreed that if we are to survive into the 21st century in our current form, we must accomplish the following in the general public. 1. Explain Freemasonry and promote a positive image of our fraternity. 2. Inform people of our humanitarian efforts and programs. 3. Publicize that we are a positive community force to be reckoned with. What can your lodge do to help itself and the fraternity? Appoint a community or public relations chairman to handle all lodge publicity and community relations matters, and to work with the district Masonic relations officer. Publicize your programs, and don't forget to inform your members on what is going on and why. Solicit their support. Don't just pay lip service to community relations. Do something. Tell your friends, neighbors, business associates how your lodge is promoting the interest of the community. Most important of all, persuade your members that their interest, concern, enthusiasm, and action is not only important, but vital." Then it goes on to say on page 7, "In every lodge, there are at least several men with knowledge and experience that will be of help. They include newspaper reporters, advertising and public relations specialists, and radio and TV advertising salespeople. Your secretary should compile a list of men with knowledge and experience in public relations and communications. Some names on the list may be members who are not active in the lodge. You will have to seek them out and impress upon them the importance of the job that needs to be done by the committee. After reviewing the list of names, the Worshipful Master can appoint a chairman. It would then be the chairman's responsibility to organize the committee, keep the members motivated, make assignments, and monitor results. Anything your lodge does to communicate with its members and the public should come under the direction of your public relations committee. This includes your lodge newsletter, publicity releases, participation at public events, and especially any dealings with news reporters and other media representatives." Now, later on, several chapters later, page 44, it gives an example of a typical Masonic radio advertisement, which just about sums up every one that there's ever been ever on TV, radio, print, you name it. So, this is supposed to be 15 seconds or 60, depending on how much you add or detract from it, and it goes, "What's happened to America? If you watch the nightly news, you may be led to believe that this country isn't what it used to be, that we're no longer competitive, that America is in decline. We think not. We're the Masons. We're members of the world's oldest and largest fraternity, more than 2.5 million men who are proud to be proud of our country, men who believe in the values that helped to build this nation, men willing to devote themselves to maintaining America as the world's greatest nation, the Masons, men who make America work. This message brought to you by the local Masons in your community, good men working together to accomplish great things." So there you have it.
it's just like a political ram. You know how the Republicans and the Democrats, they sort of work together to accomplish the same goals, no matter which one of them wins.
Right.
And they both have remarkable spin doctors. So regardless of which direction the country wants to go, they go in the same direction they want to go.
And much like the parties of the Democrats and the Republicans, much like that, the Scottish Rite too is a pilot fish that latches itself on to the carcass of the greater fish, you know, the whale that is ancient craft masonry in America going back till the 18th century. You know, Scottish Rite is one of these side orders that latches on and then tries to claim authority and tries to speak with the authority of masonry. That's what you're hearing in that little passage that Jay wrote or read. That comes from a Scottish Rite handbook, correct?
Yeah, Supreme Council, yeah. Like Supreme here, Council. Under advertising. Advertising yeah. Masonry may seem inappropriate. Remember, however, advertising is more than trying to sell. Advertising can be used to rebuild our image, and that is what we are trying to do through advertising. Masons are misunderstood because of the lack of communication in promoting the Masonic message. Advertising allows us to tell our story how and where we want it told. Masonic ads should be accurate and informative. By presenting the proper information, we may get an individual to really think about the value of Masonry, perhaps for the first time. A fringe benefit of Masonic advertising is the pride it instills in its members. It's a rare individual who isn't proud and excited to hear his lodge's name on the radio or see a commercial about his beloved fraternity. So, I mean, just more...
It's cognitive dissonance because it's implied that they're speaking for Masonry. There's no distinction being made between the Scottish Rite and Freemasonry proper, even though there is one still to this day.
My favorite is with the sentence, advertising allows us to tell our story how and where we want it told. How and where are in boldface.
And just to follow suit on this, just to be consistent and match Jay in reading excerpts, I'll read you. This is from the manuscript, page 162 of the soon to be published Secret War Inside Freemasonry that I'm working on, chapter 10, conclusions. I wanted to read this little excerpt about the same leadership that produced. This is an early embryonic form of that leadership that produced that material that Jay read to us just a moment ago. Now, this goes like this. There are several rare and obscure tomes which can often be found collecting dust on the shelves of what passes for libraries in most subordinate lodges in America, which offer very interesting insights into the global view of the early leadership of the Scottish Rite. The books are a curious group of privately issued volumes under the headings of Legenda and readings 1 through 33. These are the volumes, the number of volumes. On the surface, these little handbooks seem to be nothing more than supplemental commentaries to the massive compilation Morals and Dogma by Pike. And though the works are unsigned, they were clearly written by a disciple of, if not the man himself, in the latter half of the 19th century. Now, I've reviewed all these volumes, and I possess a few copies myself, especially the 32nd and 33rd of both sets. Page 33 of Legenda 32 states clearly that the doctrine of Masonry will ultimately rule the intellectual world is certain, though that day is far distant in the future. And Masonry must in the end conquer because its only weapon are truth, charity, and persuasion, and that logic of reason of which the sword of a knight is the symbol. And then on Legenda 19 through 32, which is in one volume, delivers the consistent vision of the Scottish Rite as the great bringer of equilibrium to the masses. On page 101, it calls for the realization of, quote, a new world order out of chaos. And this is written in like 1865, guys, right around the time of the Civil War. And the essential doctrine of the Scottish Rite is laid out on page 100 through 101, that the intellectual and social chaos in the midst of which we perish has for its cause the neglect of initiation of its test and its mysteries. So the author continues to cite the ills of the uninitiated masses, which lacks the essential law of nature, that of initiation by labors and of dangerous, toilsome, and voluntary progress, has been fatally disowned. So to rebuild society shattered and decayed, we must reestablish hierarchy and initiation. And this is the great purpose of the Scottish Rite. The reign of superstition has begun and must endure until the time when the true religion shall be established on the eternal basis of the hierarchy in 3 degrees and of the triple power which the ternary exercises fatally and providentially in the three worlds. Now, I want to point out, I'm going to end the quote there. I want to point out that it's remarkable that he just mentions the hierarchy in 3 degrees, which is the Blue Lodge. It's ancient craft masonry. It has nothing to do with the Scottish Rite. And yes, that's where they're focusing the authority of initiation. But isn't that remarkable, guys?
Oh, yeah. They actually define it here. They're talking about the writing of a Masonic press release, and it says, "This writing technique is called the inverted pyramid. It permits the editor to pick up the important facts of the story in the first few lines. Then, if he does not have space or time to use the whole release, he can cut it from the bottom, where least important details are given. This is true of both print and broadcast media." And then here's another story, the answer to give whenever somebody asks about the secrets in Freemasonry. You are to say, "There's nothing secret about Freemasonry. To 3.5 million Masons around the nation and in this community, there's nothing secret about Freemasonry. Masonic temples are prominent landmarks in most communities." That's it.
So you can see them in most communities, therefore there's nothing secret whatsoever. Like, what's the definition of secret? Like, you know, just people just not knowing about it? Or it's kept from people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Now, they're great landmarks. Okay. And do you open them to everybody? No. Who do you open them to? Well, people that we invite in. So only the exclusive group of hereditary... membership of this ancient, like, secret society are allowed in, and it's totally secret, and you're not allowed to talk about politics or something, and you're supposed to believe in this higher power, and it's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they don't even tell you what that higher power is, and you think there's absolutely nothing going on whatsoever. They're like, yeah.
Exactly. You're catching on. You could be worshipful master.
I mean, like, oh, okay, you know, if you say so, that's fine. Is everybody freaking stupid? It's just... I guess it's more the fact that because I expect scumbaggery, I actually notice it when it's being told to me, when it's being sold as something else. And going on to illustrate the point about order out of chaos. Now, you guys know I've been collecting a whole lot of screenshots of Masonic symbolism in film and cinema.
Yes, and well done, by the way.
Hundreds and hundreds. But... one other thing that I haven't been doing is taking audio samples from them, because the phrase "order out of chaos" appears as often in films made by any studio as the all-seeing eyes and the black and checkered floors and whatnot. So I'm thinking there's another part of it that really illustrates the point, is that they actually are trying to somehow put this into the public consciousness, perhaps not on a "I'm aware of making the choice," but more like, oh, order out of chaos, you know, that's fine, isn't it?
That's the thinking that the ends justifies the means. I mean, like, here they're giving examples of public events to throw, and here we go with the kids' ID program. Having a set of your child's identification is a good idea for parents. Your lodge can sponsor a one-day ID program, enlisting the help of the local police department. Materials and manpower would be provided by Masons. The program should be announced well in advance so parents can plan to bring in their children.
And you know, Vinny, going that program's always creeped me out. The CHIPS program, right from the very start, I was just never wanted to bring my kids to anything like that, and we never went and never certified our kids in any lodges.
Well, you couldn't have, man. I thought CHIPS was only on TV in the 70s.
Right, and that was a great theme, great theme song, man, with the mirrored sunglasses and everything, man. I had a pair. But to address what you said, Vinny, about how it's this perennial theme being reinforced over and over again, that just goes right back to the whole Stargate conspiracy, the whole idea of the SRI International paper changing images of man, which... from 1973, they mapped it out, that they actually suggested the use of Masonic symbolism in Egyptian iconography to corral mass consciousness, which Maderax has done a lot of research. She's actually working on an article about propaganda by Edward Bernays, who's the father of public relations and propaganda being synonymous, basically the idea of mass, the control of mass consciousness, the production and control of mass consciousness through media, through pop culture, through trusted leaders in the form of political and social icons, you know, like rock stars and movie stars and television stars and sports and athlete, you know, heroes that basically are utilized in a concerted effort. Go ahead, Maderax, if you want. I'm putting you on the spot as usual, but if you want to talk about this this subject a little bit, that'd be really cool. People would be interested, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I'm still working on getting all my notes together to kind of like make a flowing kind of synopsis. But it's interesting, as I was reading, how much of today's like programming on TV is reminiscent of what was kind of being said in the beginnings of this whole propaganda thing, like over 100 years ago. And to see the evolution of it kind of going against the stated agenda as far as like what was propaganda back then, what he was trying to say it was. Now it's he tried to make it clear in the book that he wasn't trying to say that this should be used for various purposes, and yet it seems to be being used for that right now. And
he's like, it was a celebration of democracy and free thought, mm-hmm. for everybody to be able to use mass consciousness to just bring about the right political agenda, for example. You always, in a very altruistic way, is how he depicted it.
Right. And so it's very interesting to have read that, and I'll be.
Well, it's a sales pitch at the end of the day, and all sales pitch tell you, you know, they put a really nice, beautiful image in your mind, and they tell you this, that, factor, it's going to cure your baldness, it's going to make your angry wife calmer, it's going to make everything just gravy. And of course, people who are desperate and don't want to think for themselves, in fact, many cases have never tried or never been taught to think for themselves, are constantly looking for somebody else to follow, somebody else to tell them what to do, some kind of authority to basically make the important decisions in their life so that they can continue to not think for themselves.
And just go along with their daily business, with their heads.
Now, that's how it happens on an individual level. Imagine that happening at a collective level. How bad would society get? And yeah, there it is. we've got exactly the society that I just described, didn't I?
Seems like it, yeah.
A collective apathy. A calapathy.
And you know, Vinny, it's more than a sales pitch, too, because it's the next level. It's like Mad Men on steroids. It's the production of the need and the provision of the what you need, you know, what you want. It's the solution and the problem. It's the controlled opposition, because they're with propaganda and public relations, they're talking about these. All right, for example, these an example. It was like felt patterning, you know, felt material or what was it? It was something from the 19th century, this particular kind of material, textile material that was going out of fashion. But there was
velvet.
Velvet, right. So there was a huge industry of velvet producers that needed to do something to get Americans buying velvet again, right? So what they did was they sent agents over to Europe to like inject this notion of felt being the latest fashion into the fashion world in Europe, so that it would then be reflected back to the Americans and they would pick up on it and run with it. And it like worked. It produced a whole new wave of felt or whatever velvet products that, You know, it's just crazy. But it was a great example of he took that one step further and further with political sculpting, political agenda, how they actually got Wilson elected. And even though everybody was against World War One, and he promised not to go into World War One, but the first thing he did, just like Obama, you know, like escalated war. Oh, yeah, he's Mr. I'm going to take us out of the war. I'm going to shut down Guantanamo. Well, last thing I checked, the Guantanamo is still open, and we're not – no war, no end to war is in sight. That's for damn sure. And you know, it's the same thing with Wilson. He was presented to the people as a populist president that was going to not bring America into the war, and that's exactly what happened. It went right into that war, and this is what public relations and propaganda, that this is why it's so important, why we need to take a look at that book. It's really not that hard of a read. It's actually shockingly simple of a read for people who are readers, and you're just like, you're not reading a textbook. Like, this is no complicated. This isn't Thomas Paine's Common Sense. Let me tell you, this is a very simple read that is showing you, giving you a blueprint of how consensual reality is manufactured in America to this day. And it's on a global scale with multimedia above and beyond the greatest expectations of the nephew of Sigmund Freud, which was Edward Bernays.
Well, of course. It's given birth to the culture of the 21st century, all our consumer culture, all our celebrity culture. And I think the reason why they call it culture is because the word cult's in there, basically, and you start to think about it as everybody... Imagine for a moment that everybody's in a personality cult of some description, and then suddenly, oh my God, it makes a hell of a lot more sense. Why don't you like Barack Obama, Vinny? Well, he borrowed more than all previous presidents of the U.S. history combined, and has killed more people, innocent civilians, than George W. Bush did. And they go, "You're a racist." See, it's a cult. You know, I'm messing with your God complex, man. I'm sorry, but unfortunately,
He's also got more corporate funding. He also, you know, has helped to cut more social service programs. Everybody thought he was going to be a man of the people, you know, like, oh, I'm going to – I had so many friends who were very liberal persuasion who voted for Obama thinking, well, at least, you know, he'll take care of the people, right? Yeah, right. Come on. We're seeing, like, cuts across the board to food stamps, Social Security, and they're, like, giving subsidies to the banks. You know, they're giving subsidies to the bankers, man. Like, the bankers need subsidies right now.
Yeah. Well, here's another relevant passage.
Oh, unfortunately, we're going to have to actually leave that relevant passage to the next segment, because we're going to quickly wrap this one up, and then we have two more to come. Is that all right, James?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break. In the meantime, please go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and start up a subscription today, $5 a month into the bank account. It'll be really nice if we could have groceries and pay the rent this week. So, yeah, we'll be right back.